morning, everybody. Our first order of business is to approve the agenda that's before us. Can I have a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second? If there are no, did anyone second it?
Tony, would you second? No, that has to be a member of the committee.
Tony, would you second? Just the agenda.
Just say I second.
I'll second it.
All right.
Okay.
If there are no objections, we'll move forward. And now for the approval of the minutes. We have two sets of minutes to approve this morning. I'd like to move the approval of the minutes of the October 13th Audits Committee public meeting and its executive session. May I have a second, Kathy?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. Those minutes have been moved. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Those have been approved. Now the committee's business this morning. Under the board's bylaws, the Audits and Investigations Committee is responsible for providing audit awareness training to all board members. Today, Elizabeth Sullivan from the Metro's Office of Internal Compliance, along with Inspector General Helen Liu and Stephen Dingbaum from the IG's office, will be conducting this training for the board. Now, Elizabeth, I will turn the floor over to you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Thank you very much.
Good morning again. So before we get into our session today, I just wanted to point your attention briefly to some of the information you already have. So in addition to the slide deck, you were also provided a workbook to follow along with this training session. So if you'd like to use that workbook, that will be great to follow along. We also have hard copies of those if you would like a hard copy version of that. All right. So our training today would, as mentioned, satisfy the audit awareness training requirement of the board, and it would also reinforce the board's knowledge on internal control. It would also provide us with an opportunity to discuss internal control generally, especially as we think about the value that internal control can provide for an organization, as well as really the impact of not having the proper controls as part of our environment. We have three main objectives for today's session. So my clicker is having a slight problem here. Jason? Our session objectives include, one, to increase awareness of internal controls. In order to meet this objective, we would briefly discuss the definition of internal control, as well as talk about some fundamental concepts of internal control. We will also briefly discuss expectations of internal controls when it comes to regulatory requirements. Our second objective is to be able to discuss the COSA standard for internal control, and we'll talk about this a little bit today. We'll talk about the five components of internal control. We'll talk about also the related principles. And as you may have observed in the one of the items that we provided to you is a document that has a lot of information about those five components and the principles. So while we may not go into details about those items today, you do have that as your reference material. Our third objective for today's session would be to focus specifically on the oversight responsibilities of the board. We will discuss the oversight responsibilities of the board really in the five components of internal control, so that would give us an opportunity to talk through that. We're also going to be able to have a group discussion using some specific WMATA examples, and we hope to have some interaction there because the objective of this is to be able to talk through maybe some questions that the board may be able to ask as you exercise your oversight responsibility when it comes to internal control. So our next slide shows the definition of internal control. As you look at that definition in the slide that you have, since my clicker is not working, I'm hoping that could be advanced for me. But in terms of that definition, what I would like you to do is to focus specifically on some keywords. As you look at that, you would notice that it talks about internal control as being a process. You would also notice that it's effected by people, starting with the board of directors. And you'd also notice that as part of that definition, it says that internal control provides reasonable assurance, and it also is geared towards the achievement of objectives. So please keep these key concepts in mind as we go through our process today. One of the things that we wanted to do is to be able to share that these keywords actually mean something when we start to think about the board oversight responsibilities for internal control. Our next slide provides some key concepts of those fundamental concepts that we wanted to talk about in terms of internal controls. It's geared towards the achievement of objectives, and as you can think about it, any organization has business and performance objectives. Usually they can be categorized in three main categories. You have your operational objectives, you have your reporting objectives, which we'll talk about possibly information internal or external to the organization that's financial or non-financial in nature. Another objective that most organizations look to is a compliance objective. A lot of us have compliance expectations, and the objective is to be able to meet those expectations. Again, as a key concept, internal control is a process. So it's not just one of those things that you do once and then it's over. The expectation is that it's ongoing, and it's made up of multiple tasks that have to be performed. So it is a means to an end and not an end itself. Effective by people, another key concept that we should think about when it comes to internal control. So it's not merely about policies and procedures and manuals, systems, forms, the things that you would think about when you think about internal control. It is very much about people and the actions that they take at various levels of an organization. Another key concept, it's adaptable, and it's also one that could be applied in a flexible manner across the organization. And as we look at the COSO Cube, which we'll talk about shortly as well, you will notice that illustrated as part of the COSO Cube. We'll talk about that. And then maybe I'll go back to the one right above that. It provides reasonable assurance. We've talked about this earlier as well. Absolute assurance would be great. However, controls have limitations. When you think about the fact that it's affected by people, you already think about the fact that there's judgment associated with performing internal controls. So that in itself could be very limited in terms of the values controls can provide. The other thing to think about is no matter how well designed your system of internal control is, when you have collusion, then it really circumvents, or when you have people circumventing controls and they come together to basically do that, then you have another limitation to internal control. Just something to think about a concept as we think about internal controls. The last one talks about it involves the plans as well as the methods or the policies that an organization puts forth to accomplish its mission, its strategic plans, its goals and objectives. I mentioned before the system of internal control. What we're trying to say here is a lot of things come together within an organization to constitute what internal control is. Again, it's a system. And our next slide gives us one key concept that we all should take away from today. We continue to make this an education point, even here internally with staff. Internal control is everyone's responsibility. It's not the responsibility of just the finance organization or maybe the OIG or auditors, as some may think, and we'll talk about that shortly as well. Just some other things to think about when it comes to internal control in terms of types. You may be aware that there are different types of internal controls, like you could have some that are referred to as hard controls or soft controls. For example, you may have a lock on the door, which is a form of a control that could be a hard control, or a policy that exists that we're all supposed to follow. That in itself could be a soft control. So there are different types of controls. Another thing to think about is control could vary in levels of precision. So you could have a form of verification to validate a maybe predetermined number. That's one type of a control with a less precision. Or you could have like a recalculation that's required. That could require a lot more precision. It could be directive in nature. We talked about policies before. It could be preventive in nature. Like in our environment, we have a process where we have capital payment review process, which ensures compliance with cost principles before vendors are paid for the capital funded projects or federally funded projects, to be very specific about that. So again, the important thing here is we place that control to prevent the risk that we would violate cost principles. So that's a preventive control. An example of a detective control would be one that happens after the fact, but it still provides value because you can identify if a failure has existed and you're provided with an opportunity to correct that. So now let's talk about the value of internal control, which our next slide provides for us. In terms of the value of internal control, it's really baked right there into the definition of internal control. If you can advance that a few more times for me, please. In terms of the value of internal control, it's geared towards the achievement of an objective. That in itself is the selling point, isn't it? And those objectives could be, in fact, operations in nature. We mentioned that. What organization would not want to work effectively and efficiently? Internal control can provide that value. In terms of reporting, every organization has to report information internally and externally. And again, this could be financial or non-financial data. Another value for internal controls in terms of the accomplishment of objectives. Compliance, adherence to laws and regulations, very unique for us because a lot of our expectations actually support our ability to continue to remain grant eligible. So having an objective or being able to fulfill the objective of compliance is very key and very valuable to an organization like ours or any other organization. So what's really illustrated here for you as you look at it is, if an organization is able to clearly articulate its objectives and is able to identify the risks to meeting those objectives, having well-designed controls can assist in that. And while properly placed into operation, then you have that true value, which is a reasonable assurance that our objectives will be accomplished. So now let's talk a little bit about the regulatory expectations of control in our next slide. So you may be familiar with the uniform guidance, which was basically a streamlined and consolidated requirement of federally funded awards. That's one thing that went to effect back in December 2014, and it became effective for new and continuation awards on or after December 2014. And the requirement here is when OMB put this together, there were very specific requirements for internal control. As part of the guidance provided, it says that non-federal entities such as ours must establish and maintain effective internal controls that provide reasonable assurance that the entity is managing federal awards in compliance with federal statutes, regulations, as well as the terms and conditions of the grant. And as you go through expectations of the uniform guidance, for those of you that may be familiar with it, what you would notice really is the word must is used to denote mandatory. So there are no exceptions to having a system of internal control. If we go more specifically to one that's closer to us, FTA Circular 5010, which we use to also manage our grants, this actually will be updated to reflect the uniform guidance shortly from what we understand. But if you look into that regulation, the expectation there is that we also establish and maintain adequate internal controls that allow us to manage our grants in an effective manner. As you think again about the uniform guidance there, the requirement also is not just that we have this system of internal control, but that it be in compliance with certain standards. It provides within the guidance two primary standards. One of them is COSO, the Internal Control Integrated Framework, which again we'll talk about shortly. I know we keep talking about COSO. I just want to make sure that you understand that we'll clarify and provide some information on that. Or the Green Book, which is a standard that's used in the government. So any one of these two standards would be a required standard for internal control. So one of the things that this slide should drive home for us is that we've already established that internal control is good business, but then again, in order for us to remain compliant or eligible for federal awards, we need to and must have internal controls. All right, in terms of WMATA's internal control requirements, the next slide provides us with some information. And I would like to recall the last year we had the GAO in here, and one of the things that they were tasked with was to identify improvements that could be made by WMATA when it comes to financial management post-FMO. Back in October 2015, I believe that we provided some information to the board to talk about what WMATA has done in reaction to that. We received two main recommendations for financial management when it comes to internal controls. The recommendation was that we develop and implement policies and procedures for financial management related risk, as well as policy and procedures for monitoring financial management controls. In reaction to that, what WMATA has done is we developed this financial management risk and control policy. And I believe that one of the things that when we discussed this with the board was very interested in the process that we followed there. And I believe that board member Costa was the one that asked the question, would you be doing self-assessments when it comes to internal controls? Well, our policy actually requires that we do that as part of this ownership for frontline management to take the responsibility for controls. The other thing that we have is that our policy now requires that we do the separate monitoring, which is what a team like ours would do as part of the ongoing and monitoring process. The policy also requires that we do an annual assessment of financial management related risk. So we have conducted the initial stages of this. We have provided a structure that would allow management to at some point take that frontline ownership that would be facilitated by our team. And we could talk about that in future information sessions. We'll be glad to provide some more information to the board on that. And so before we talk about the specific responsibilities, one of the things in our next slide we want to try to illustrate is that a lot of times people have misconceptions when it comes to internal controls. But what you can see there that internal controls, in terms of factual, what's factual and what's not, for us, internal controls is very important. I don't have a copy of the slide. Let me just see right here. I can't see that far. Thank you, Helen. So one of the myths or misconceptions about internal control is that, well, internal control starts with a good set of policies and procedures. Well, policies and procedures are great. I think we'll all appreciate that. However, what we're saying is that internal control actually starts with a strong control environment. When we talk about the five components of internal control shortly, what you will find is that control environment is that true foundation that all of the control components rely on. If you don't have a good and strong control environment, the tone at the top that drives what people do, as well as competent people that are required to perform those controls, well, the problem is then you have policies and procedures that are not maybe as effective because people are not performing controls as expected. The next item talks about, you know, we have auditors and we have internal reviewers, so why worry about internal control? That is definitely the impression that some may have. However, the fact is, while we have auditors and internal reviewers, and that plays a good part when it comes to the system of internal control, the truth is that, as we mentioned, that key concept, everybody has a responsibility for internal control. The next item, it's not just the finance thing. It is really an integral part of any business. So it's just not applied just to finance. Another misconception is that, oh, it's a list of do's and don'ts, and it's just very disruptive. It's negative. Well, no. Factually, internal control makes the right things happen the first time. So that's just a positive spin on it, but is it in fact the case? Internal controls take away from our business process is another thing that you might hear. But the truth is, it should be incorporated seamlessly as part of our business process. So now, who has responsibility for internal controls? Well, we also said that internal controls is everyone's responsibility. The board of directors, you do have responsibility for oversight of internal controls. Our general manager and CEO is responsible for establishing, maintaining, and monitoring the system of internal controls. Management in general, that's management at all levels, have the accountability to design and ensure the controls are working effectively and operating effectively. And staff at all levels, also assigned to perform control activities, truly have to own the responsibility of performing control activities completely and accurately. So to illustrate in our next slide the responsibility for internal controls, we've been sharing what we call our three lines of defense assurance model, which really illustrates for us the responsibility for internal control. As you can see right there at the top of that responsibility scale is our board of directors with the oversight responsibility, illustrated as well with management having responsibility. But if you look at the first line of defense, our managers, frontline operations people, everyone that has a part to play here at WMATA, the important thing is to understand the business process owners that own the activities that create and manage risks that can be facilitated, that can facilitate or prevent the achievement of WMATA's objectives, take first-line ownership of risks and controls. Second line would include organizations like ours that are put in place by the general manager to support management in ensuring that risks and controls continue to be managed effectively. The third line of defense would be an organization like the OIG, who has that independent assurance and can also provide that assurance to the board that internal controls are being performed as expected. So now we've gotten to the standards of internal control, which is our next slide. So we talked about the Green Book being one standard. We talked about COSO being another standard. And then we talked about the OMB standards say we can use any one of these two. Well, they're very much related for those of you that are familiar with them. But let's talk about COSO, since that's the one that we've identified internally as our standard for financial management controls at this time. Well, what does COSO stand for? It stands for the Committee of Sponsoring Organization, and it is a private sector initiative that was established back in 1985 initially to help improve situations where fraudulent financial reporting was occurring. It's made up of five main organizations, and they first developed their internal control framework back in 1992. And since then, it's been well accepted as a framework that can be used to evaluate a system of internal control. Well, this framework was updated in 2013, primarily to articulate and really explicitly demonstrate 17 main principles that have to be present within an organization in order for them to have a sound system of internal controls. It also aligns its principles to the five components, which you can see in front of you, which is control environment, risk assessment, control activities, information and communication, and monitoring activities. And we'll talk about those briefly. Our next slide shows an expectation of evaluation. When we're evaluating internal controls, the expectation is that all five components and the related 17 principles are working together in an integrated manner. They have to be present and functioning. And then the other thing is that the principles have about 87 or so points of focus. The guidance is that they're not required. However, those points of focus point you to the proper application of the 17 principles that are, in fact, required. And in terms of what we mean by all five components have to work in an integrated manner, well, we'll demonstrate that as we go over some specific examples. So let's talk briefly about the five components. The next slide, if we go back one, please. The next slide, control environment, thank you. As you can see there, shows you we have five principles related to that. Control environment, as we mentioned earlier, is the foundation for all other components of internal control. It provides the discipline and the structure and the process that is really established by the board of directors based on their directives to management. These standards and structures set the tone and they form a basis for conducting control activities across the organization. This tone at the top is very important, as stressed by this component, because that tone has that trickle-down effect, ensuring that those that are responsible for internal control understand that it is the expectation. It is important that this is well understood. So in the next slide, and what, as you see those principles, our intent is not to go over every one of those principles. However, as we illustrate the example, the responsibilities of the board of directors, we would actually touch on those principles because they are, in fact, based on those principles. So as you look at the six components, the six items listed up there as the responsible for internal control when it comes to control environment, as you think through them, would any of those even stand out as something that will be questioned? Is this really a responsibility of the board? For example, it says establish ethical values. We know that the board has its own ethical policy, leading by example, and has also provided, at least approved, a policy for management and staff to also abide by expectations of ethics. And I know that we're updating our ethics policy recently. The other thing is in terms of developing expectations for competence. That's something that the board also has to see as a responsibility. Commissioning oversight effectiveness reviews. I'm sure that knowing how the board operates, we know that this is something that you also perform in terms of a responsibility. So as you look at some of these things, what you'll find is it's more of a validation of the responsibilities that you currently perform. The next component of internal control that we'll talk about is risk assessment. Risk assessment has six specific principles associated with it, and the responsibilities will help us think through that. But risk assessment is the identification and analysis of relevant risks to the achievement of an organization's objectives. It forms the basis for how risks are managed throughout the organization. And one thing that was very clear in the update to the COSO framework when it comes to risk assessment is that a precondition for the assessment of risk is the clear identification of objectives. If you don't clearly articulate and identify your objectives, then it would be very difficult to understand the risks associated with them or even the controls that need to mitigate them to an acceptable level. The other thing that we think about when it comes to risk assessment is how are we reacting to change? We know that the organization goes through change at different times, but are we primed to react to change when it comes to our assessment of risk? The responsibility of the board outlined there, and again, covers those four principles for risk assessment, the component. One of the things that we say here is that the board should oversee management's assessment of risk and the achievement of the objectives. That is something that the board should be looking for management and asking questions about that. The other item that's here says that, you know, ensuring that management is considering internal and external factors that pose a significant risk to the organization or the achievement of the organization's objectives. That is another board responsibility. Again, as you look through these items, the four specific ones, is there anything here that we would question whether or not this is in fact a board responsibility? And as I said before, what you're probably finding is more of a validation of some things that you're doing already, or maybe just something to help think about things that could be maybe even done even further. Control activities is the third component of the COSA model. And control activities are the policies and procedures that help ensure the management's directives are carried out, to help ensure that the necessary actions are taken to address risk and the achievement of an organization's objectives. They should form, or they should be performed, rather, at various stages within the organization. Remember earlier on we talked about one of the concepts of internal control is that it is very flexible in its application and it's adaptable to any organization. So the idea is we can actually have controls at the entity level within an organization and have controls that function at maybe divisions, at subsidiaries for organizations that have those, as well as functions or functional level, as well as processes as well. So that's one beauty of internal control, is that it's adaptable to any organizational structure that we may have. And what the control activities component really stresses for us is that we should have different types of controls. And we talked about the nature of internal control. They could be detective, directive, or preventive in nature. A good blend of those types of controls, hard and soft, those that have precisions that are varying as well, a good blend, a good range of that would really help complement a good system of internal control. So responsibilities for internal control when we talk about control activities. Well, the board should provide oversight to management in the development of and performance of control activities. Make specific inquiries of management, and I'm sure the board knows that they do this because I've been a part of that. When it comes to internal controls, there should be specific inquiries of management to understand why controls are selected, how they're deployed, and how control activities are actually being performed throughout the organization. The fourth control component, internal control component, is information and communication. This involves the identification, capture, communication of data, and pertinent business information in a form and time frame that enables an organization to carry out its responsibilities. Communication includes the manner as well as the time frame that information is provided, as well as the upward and downward movement of flow of information across the organization. And in illustrating for you what we mean is some of these control components should work in an integrated manner. When you think about the expectations of information and communication, the requirement is that staff responsible for internal control should have clear direction on the expectation when it comes to information and communication. Well, in the control environment component, the principle four talks about competence and how we should have competent people performing controls. It also says control activities should be deployed in control component three, which is control activities. Well, information and communication ties with that because when you provide competent people the right information, then you have that reasonable assurance and that true value of internal control. Just one illustration of how all five components should work in an integrated manner. Our next component is monitoring. Well, maybe before we go to monitoring, I'm going ahead of that. What about the responsibilities when it comes to internal control, when it comes to information and communication? Well, the board's responsibility is to communicate direction and the tone at the top. We mentioned that that's very important. Also, the board should obtain, analyze, and discuss information relating to the organization's achievement of objectives. We know that this definitely happened. We have information items coming to the board all the time, either in written form when you get your board packages or right here as part of different committee meetings. So again, as you look at these responsibilities, you will validate some of the actions that you're already taking. And those that are outlined really in the board bylaws are clear that these responsibilities are taken seriously. Another thing is to understand that because there's an expectation to have and obtain this information, management also should be aware that there's a requirement there that the right information is provided to the board so that the board can exercise that oversight responsibility. So now we can go to our next component, the final one, monitoring activities. Well, what are monitoring activities? Well, they help ensure that internal controls continue to operate effectively, and they involve the assessment of internal control, whether it's ongoing or separate. The expectation within this is also that there be different degrees of monitoring activities. They could be self-monitoring as part of a self-assessment process that could be facilitated by an organization like ours, or it could also be one that could be separate monitoring, and of course we know that there's independent monitoring with the OIG as well. So expectation here is that findings of failure of internal control be properly communicated to the board. And that's something that management needs to be able to do. Well, let's talk about the specific board responsibilities when it comes to control activities. Well, the expectation is that the board think through and ask questions that are important to the performance of controls. If the board is not asking the right questions about what management is doing and how things are being monitored, then that, you know, there would be some, there could be some failure points there because that information is not clear. We actually have some examples of some specific controls that we actually perform here that will take us through some of these control components. So I guess the question for today then is to ask ourselves, with the next slide, are you asking the right questions when it comes to internal controls? Well, we have a group exercise, and we're hoping that we get some interaction as we talk through this. I'm not going to put you on the spot, but maybe we can talk a bit about some of the examples of internal controls that have been provided to you in your workbook, if you have a copy of that. And then we can ask ourselves the question, well, what component has WMATA applied here, which we'll talk through that. And the good thing is, as we reacted to the GAO recommendation, we actually mapped, when it comes to financial management controls, we mapped ourselves to those 17 principles and have at least been able to demonstrate that they are, in fact, present within our organization when it comes to financial management, because we were doing more of a limited scope application. The second question.
Elizabeth, yes, compared please. To actually going through the exercise, could you better inform the board that are we, in your opinion, following the protocol set out?
So that's one approach. We'll do that. Yes, we are when it comes to financial management. So as I was saying earlier on, one of the things that we did was, in order for us to be able to react to the GAO's expectation, which was to monitor ourselves against the five components of internal control, we understood that what that would mean for us is to actually apply that standard so that we can evaluate or monitor ourselves against it. So what we did was, when it comes to financial management, we outlined WMATA's processes and activities to support that and identified, in our opinion, what we thought were gaps when we thought gaps existed, or what we thought were points of improvement when we thought a gap did not exist in a way that would cause us to conclude that we do not have that principle represented in our environment. So one example is within the risk assessment component. There is an expectation in Principle 8 that we conduct fraud or consider fraud in the assessment of risk. One of the things that we're thinking about is, you know, the expectation of that principle is that we conduct, from a management standpoint, we know what the OIG does in terms of fraud evaluation, and we were actually able to use some of the things that they do to represent that, to demonstrate that principle exists in our environment. But from a management standpoint, one of the things that we're thinking about is, as we start to consider the expectations of that principle, which says consider the fraud triangle, for example, what are the pressures that exist that allow fraud to occur? What are the opportunities for fraud? And then what are the rationalizations, or what some of us call the fraud triangle? That's a very deep dive assessment in terms of where fraud could occur within an organization, and then are we taking the right actions to ensure that we can identify or detect it, or maybe even prevent it because we close gaps or those opportunities that may exist. So that's one thing that we're considering from a management standpoint, that we just do an assessment of that and see how we can provide that principle to be better represented, because even though we have some things that currently occur, we think that we could have that principle better represented in our environment if we take that step.
Is there open questions there?
So, I mean, if we don't want to go through the exercise, we can talk about some specific questions, and I can talk through that as well.
In the spirit of saving time, as many other committee chairs have done today, I would like to open it up to questions. Tony.
Thanks, and thanks for the presentation. As some of you probably know, the federal government has an intense management control process, which over the years I've learned to like. And the reason I learned to like it is that, in essence, there are GAO requirements. OMB sends guidance out, but if you look at the basis of what this is, it's just an assurance that good business controls are in place.
Right.
And I would say to my colleagues that three-quarters of the questions we ask are actually management control questions. We always ask, when did we know this? How did we know this? How do we know it's not going to happen again? Which are my basic language translation of many of the things we're talking about. And so when you have a good control system, ecosystem in place, you can be relatively assured that you can answer those questions. But I have a question. Does each major component attest every year that management controls are in place, and are they checked by you all?
So the answer to that question is yes. We are still in the process of that. However, this is very limited at this time to financial management controls. So what we've done is, in order to facilitate that process, a lot of times when people think about controls, they might just think about policies and procedures and not thinking about those activities, those underlying activities that are actually performed. And we know that people actually perform controls every day. They just don't relate to the fact that they are, in fact, conducting controls. So in order to help provide that education and even to demonstrate to ourselves that those controls exist, what we did from a financial management standpoint is, starting with a clearly defined objective for financial management, we identified the processes that support the accomplishment of that objective, all 16 of them primarily. So we're thinking about things like, you know, audit to cash when it comes to our cash management process, or we're thinking about processes in terms of hire to retire when it comes to human transactions or human resource related transactions, or when we're talking about other things that have to do with our reporting processes. So we have 16 core financial management processes that have been identified. Based on that, we identified risks to accomplishing of those objectives, and we identified the control activities that exist. So what we have is a risk and control matrix that clearly states what the risk and controls are. And if you, as you were talking, I was wondering if you were also relating to the A123 expectation that's been recently updated, requiring a focus on risk management along with controls. So the expectation there, one of the 7-point processes, is to do an inherent as well as a residual assessment of risk. So inherent assessment is, if this risk should occur without controls in place, where would we be? However, residually, considering our controls, if they're working effectively, would we have a good reduction of risk? And when you have an acceptable level of risk based on controls, what you then want to see is that those controls continue to operate. So based on that assessment, if we've determined that we have good controls that are designed, our process would require that we monitor that those controls continue to operate effectively, and then that self-assessment or that certification process would then be on management. So we are headed in that direction. Our policy requires that we do that. Our procedures are actually also have been put together to allow us to do that. But to facilitate that, we've done the first phase of that, which is to clearly identify what those control activities are, clearly identify those that are required to perform those activities, so that these then can over time start to certify periodically that they are in fact performing those controls. And what this really gives them is an opportunity to self-identify control failures when they occur, maybe even self-correct them before an organization like ours come in and a second line of defense to help identify that, or maybe even before OIG comes in to identify it. So it's a proactive exercise. And in order to have that work, as I've seen in the past, we just don't want to start that process without providing the right tools to have management provide to get them to that point. So these risk and control matrices that we've developed primarily based on each end-to-end process, financial management process, is what will then be turned into that required certification based on the control owners.
I think the only thing I'd suggest is it's going to take time, and it's fairly complicated to have the whole apparatus in place, and I understand that. But maybe there's a light version of the non-financial management aspects that business owners might be required to do sooner rather than later, at least to get into practice. Because again, if this is done well, it's no different than thinking about how you should run your business if it's done well. And so that's what I suggest, to look at a light version for the other aspects.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I think as we talked about that, one thing that's clear, while we started financial management primarily because it was a mandate, the good business thing would be to consider all our other control objectives. It's not just about financial. We talked about that too. So, yes, we would look into that. I think one of the things that I've seen work, sometimes you do this phased approach, and because of the success we get from the financial management one, because I really believe it's going to be successful once we roll it out, then we could take that and roll it out even further within the organization. And one of the things I should also mention to you, just in case you're wondering, is because we know that this requires education, we're starting with helping people understand the importance of internal control. So right now, based on GM directive, we have close to 900 employees that have through December 31st to go through an online training on internal controls that requires them to actually take a test they have to pass in order to certify that they've completed this training and this awareness training. And we also have another one on financial management compliance that we actually built in-house, very tailored to WMATA's processes to help them understand this. So we're prepping management for this effort, not just by what we're doing internally, but then educating them on the expectations of internal control.
Other questions from the committee? Helen, was it in reference to that or another matter?
It's in reference to this.
Okay, Helen.
Okay. I just want to add that, as Tony mentioned, in the federal government, they have the FMFIA self-assessments of each one of the departments. The focus that Liz and her team is doing is primarily on financial management, but it's easier to start there.
Right.
And then it moves out. And we've been working closely with them, and I'm really glad to hear about the training, because although it's the tone of the top, it's everybody has to embrace this.
Right.
And that means all the employees have to, management have to, the middle managers, all the way up. So the training will really help, and the online training will be great. It might be a good thing to have it, like you do your IT awareness on an annual basis, so it reinforces it.
Yep.
But the other thing is, under the reorganization that the general manager has, there's a quality control group, too.
Right.
And that's more technical. That's more like looking at rail, inspection of rail, a bus, and plant. And that's the area we need to embrace this internal control. Because while you're focusing on the financial management, there are policies and procedures, as we all know, are standard operating procedures that they're really great, but the adherence and the compliance, there's weaknesses there. And that quality control group needs to embrace some of the monitoring and the review of that. We do that as part of our audits. We do performance audits that focus on economy and efficiency of WMATA's programs, activities, and operations. But we also do internal control that are very compliance-oriented. So when we do that, there's only so much we could do with the resources that we have.
Right.
But in those areas that relate to policies and procedures, those are the things that we would like to refer to Liz to make sure that. See, with the IG, we identify all these findings. We have a responsibility to report to the board. We give them quarterly status on where we are on open recommendations. So, you know, maybe the first year they do all these things, but the problem is maintaining that, doing that on a regular basis and not always doing it just so the IG will be off my back. I'll do it for now. So we really need Liz and the quality control people that we identify this, they corrected it, but we need to maintain this. And that's where I think we help each other.
Right.
And work. So that's what I want to do.
Thank you. Let me switch to Kathy now.
Yes. Okay, this probably as much an observation as a question. And I wonder how many of the newer board members realize how new this highly organized process is, you know. What was it, 2 or 3 years ago when we had the FTA review and critique of our financial processes,
right.
A lot of these things, you know, the board and the management of
WMATA took a look at some of this stuff, and there were some major changes in the kinds of things that we did. This audit awareness training requirement for board members is fairly new. The quality control office is fairly new. A lot of the processes existed prior to that, but they're more organized, they're more written down, they are hopefully better followed.
Yes.
So a lot of this is new, and sometimes I know when people think about this, we sort of get into the weeds, and it's hard for board members who are not experts to see the importance of all of this, but this whole organization and this whole process is fairly new, and it's a big improvement over what we used to do, even as recently as 2 or 3 years ago. And so, you know, I thank Helen and certainly thank Ms. Sullivan for the work that they've done. And I would like to just reiterate the comment that Tony made, that we're not there all the way there yet. There's been some good progress made, and certainly focusing first on the areas where we knew we had the biggest problems. But there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. And it's already gotten us as board members, I can tell you as somebody who's been on the board for some time, it's certainly gotten us as board members better information than we used to have prior to these processes going in place. So it's been an improvement, and I want to thank you for your part in it.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? Helen, is there anything else under the report, or Elizabeth, anything else under the report that we need to go over today?
No.
All right. And Mr. Chairman, I'd like to turn it back over to you for the next meeting. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Cochran. I believe our next meeting is the executive board meeting upstairs. So let's adjourn upstairs.
Not yet.
We haven't adopted that rule yet.